Good morning. Do we have one? Hope everyone enjoyed the game last night, and we're looking forward to a big day today. We're going to get started with our 1979 Pirates player panel, and I will let Joe Block introduce our players, former players. But first, I just want to give a real thanks to Joe. He was here for the panel yesterday morning, then he emceed the day at the ballpark in the afternoon. Then, as you know, there was a long game last night, and then he's back here with his coffee this morning. So let's hear a round of applause for Joe. As it was reported yesterday, but I'll just give you a little brief intro, Joe's in his third season as the Pirates play-by-play broadcaster. He spent four seasons before that working with Bob Uecker with the Brewers. Previously, he had worked as a studio host for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the NBA's New Orleans Hornets. He's a graduate of Michigan State University, and now I will turn it over to Joe. Once again, we've got cards in the back, so anyone who has questions, and I know they're going to be answering a lot of questions today.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you for being here very early today. How many of you lasted the whole game last night? Anybody? Really? Should I have raised my hand, too? I was there. I guess I was... So let me introduce the winning pitchers of Game 6 and 7 of the 1979 World Series, John Candelaria and Grant Jackson. We certainly don't have enough time to go through every part of the 79 season, and I'm going to attempt to kind of walk us through it, and I'm going to miss some things inadvertently, but I'm going to try to hit on some of the points. So, guys, if you have anything to stray on from what I bring up, please feel free. But, I wanted to maybe start in the parts of the regular season that year. And, when we watch a baseball team get going and our hearts sink in April or May when they don't come out of the gates very well. That team was 4-10. They were 12-18, and fourth place at the All-Star break. Did you think it was a special team at that point? When did you know that maybe something was good? Maybe it was spring training that year. Who knows?
Well, it's a long season, so fourth place at the All-Star break, as good as all the teams were, and we had to play each other. It's more or less in our hands. What we had to do to get the third, second, first, whatever it may be, but you just play. It's a long season.
You feel the same way, Grant? I mean, it was just, you weren't really thinking much about it.
I feel the same way that Candy does about the stats and all the stuff. I have never been a real stats person, and I know that I knew the team that we had was an outstanding team. It's just a matter of time. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And the All-Star break, you got a long way to go. And we had the lightning number of stealing bases and tremendous pitching staff with Chuck Tanner and leading us and Harvey Haddix handling the pitching. But as a whole, like we just say, even when we lost the first game of the World Series, we were in Baltimore. And the clubhouse guy I played in Baltimore, and he said, "Buck, you guys getting crabs and beer after the game you lost the World Series?" I said, "I know." So we'd be all right. And I had played in Baltimore, like I said, I had called Bo Brooks's. We had about 24 dozen crabs sitting there. And party music you couldn't even hear. But we knew it was going to be all right because it was a place that we had been before. We've been under pressure, but you know something? The family stuck together and we came through.
It was a family. That's right. So you guys were 40-38 on July 8th. Then you won 13-14 through the break. You end up going 30-11 over the next 41 games to take a four-game lead. Now we're starting to talk about September. The Expos are in it. And let's go to September 18th in Montreal. Pops, Willie Stargell, hits the go-ahead home run in the 11th inning, at about 2 in the morning. And I was reading that Chuck Tanner had said something about to Pops earlier in the day that you know, he's aching, he's trying to get through the, you know, the rigors of the season, and he gave him a pep talk. Do you remember that day, anything from that day earlier, and then, of course, playing in the wee hours of the night?
I don't remember much about that. But it's such a long season, and everyone's hurt, not only Willie, most of the players. It's the dog days. And Willie had a tremendous year, obviously the MVP of the National League with Keith Hernandez, and just the series that he had, the World Series, was phenomenal. And it was an honor playing with Willie. And someone you don't know just passed away yesterday and day before, our trainer, Tony Bartirome. So,
I didn't hear that. Yeah.
So, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't hear that yet.
Yeah, I just found out late last night. Oh. So. Looks like a trip to Florida.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's sad news. I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
Speaking of the conversation that Chuck and Pops had, Willie was always in charge of the team on the field. I mean, in the clubhouse and partially on the field, because even like if I don't know, he did when he come to mind when I was pitching, or like if he did the same thing to Candy, and hey Buck, you know you're better than this. These son of SOBs can't hit you with on a good day. So I said, okay, you know, I look at Papa's day, they ain't going nowhere. And we ended up throwing it. So the name of our game was to throw strikes and let our infield guys behind us get the ball. We had a good catcher, Steve Nicosia, Eddie Ott. Who's the other kid?
Sangi.
And Sangi was there once in a while, but that we could do anything we want almost. Not all, everything, but if we decided to do it, it's going to get done, and that's the way it was. There's no bull, you know. What I'm saying, I don't want to say the words because the lady's in here, but you know what I mean. We got the job done, okay?
I'm thinking about the fans in that final week of the regular season. There was so the Expos come back to Three Rivers. I think the date was the September 24th. There was a doubleheader on a Monday, and yeah. Teek gives up the lead. Kent Tekulve gives up a lead in the eighth. He went 3 innings for the save in the opening game, and in the nightcap, he ends up giving up the lead. Grant, you come on, and Ellis Valentine hits a go-ahead single in the ninth off you. Expos get a split. They stay a half game up on you guys. And when I read about that series, too, is the crowd was crazy. Now, of course, you guys go on and win the rest of the series against the Expos. But do you remember that night? I mean, thinking, are we going to be good enough to make it? Was there any part of that? Or did you guys keep that confidence that you guys were talking about? I mean, it didn't matter if you had fallen behind.
I tell you, what you're speaking about, don't remember, because it was just yesterday that we did this. But I don't remember the hit that Ellis Valentine get off, but I always knew, we as a team, knew we had all comeback capabilities. And the Expos had a great team. They had pretty good pitching staff, Steve Rogers, Gary Carter, and Ellis, and Cromartie, and Tim Raines, and I don't remember who was in right field. But they were a good team also because, in fact, they had overall stats. The Montreal team was always, like, second in run as far as winning percentage in baseball. But they just could never get it over the hump. And in 1980, when I got traded from the Pirates in 81, one of those two, and I came to the game against the Pirates. And just before the game, I was over in the Pirates Club. I was bull driving, talking with everybody, eating chicken and fish and having a good time. And I come in the game, they called me. My first hitter was Dave Parker. So, I mean, so the first pitch I threw to Parker was right across the top of the hat. So I looked, oh, come on, Buck. I said, you know how I work. And we ended up beating them 1-0, 2-1, whatever the score was. But those are good times. I mean, we're going back 30 years now. Heck, right now, I don't remember what the hell I did yesterday.
40 years.
Yeah, it's coming up at 40.
Just saying.
Just saying. But that's where it was. I tell you what. Candy probably said the same thing. I'm going to let Candy expound on it because we had a tremendous team.
Yeah, the crowds, too. I mean, you know, when as you guys – we're getting toward the end of that regular season. I mean, what were the crowds like? I mean.
It was electric.
Yeah.
And we owe Steve Carlton a share that we never sent to Lefty anyway because we really didn't like him. But he was a great pitcher, one of the best I've ever seen. He beat Montreal 1-0, 10-inning shutout, and we won that game, which got us into the playoffs. So they were a good team as well. Buck was talking about how good Montreal team was. Philadelphia was right there as well. So we were in tough division. We all had good teams. We had an outstanding team. It was great to play with them, an honor to play with the guys. And I can't tell you how much fun we actually had in the clubhouse. Yeah. It was a joy. It was a good trip. Best organization at the time with the players that I played with the 19 years that I played. It was fun. It was an honor to play with Willie and Parkway and Gar and all those guys. They came to play on and off the field.
I mean, is that what made it so good, is that you guys could become friends, but you also knew that everyone was giving it their all? I mean, was that kind of the...
It was demanded. Field. I mean, we had our right fielder, Parker, who should... I've seen some players in the Hall of Fame that he's better than, so... But when your superstar player hits a ground ball, one hopper to second baseman, and he is full speed going down to first base, there's the example. So no one else on the team did. Went down jogging like I see today. Kind of pisses me off, but what are you going to do?
No, you're right. No, you're right on. You see it too often. I pointed it out last night. One of the younger Pirates did hustle, almost beat out a routine ground ball in the 9th inning, and then I think it was
Meadows.
Yeah, right. And then in what was it, 12th inning or something, yeah. He had a better chance of beating it out, but he didn't come out of the box hard and was out easily. So
that wouldn't not
happen. Just him, it's
that
everybody.
Wouldn't have happened on the 79 team. Someone would have said something.
Yeah.
Your own teammate would have done.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Different times in that regard. I wish we see a lot more of that here today, for sure.
I tell you, I want to say something. You know, I watch guys hit home runs nowadays. Does anybody remember Dick Allen?
Yeah. Phillies?
Well, when I was playing with the Philadelphia Phillies, Richie Allen, we call him Richie, used to hit balls out of the ballpark, and somebody asked Richie one day, Richie, how far was that? Richie said, did you see it land? He said, no, yeah. He said, then that was my furthest. But Richie was the type of guy, when he hit a ball and knew it was out of the ballpark, by the time the ball landed or got out of the ballpark, he was at second base. He never broke it down until he got between shortstop and third base. He never come home with his little walk. He got the home plate, then he'd take five steps, touch home plate, tip his hat, and go to the dugout. Our guys hit the ball, and they would stand and look at it. When we, well, long time ago.
30 years ago.
If I hit you and you hit a home run, I don't mind if you catch you looking at it. You go pay, pal. Mm-hmm. And I just watched Harmon Killebrew hit balls when I was in America. He hit it, throw the bat, run to first base. Hank Aaron, guys that like to say had did it before.
Willie.
And I gave up a whole lot in 1 year. Hank Aaron got me 4 times in 1 year. And every time he give us, hey, I kind of like you. I said, Bush, man. and I tell you what, the only thing about it, he hit 700 some change, but I only in there 5 times. Did he get you?
Hank? I didn't play. My last year. Okay. Spring training, so that doesn't count.
He was over in the American League.
But he didn't hit a home run. Yeah. I just faced him. But,
yeah. Yeah. Back then, you know, the guys, we used to talk a lot. To each other, like Clemente, if you have a bad night, you talk to him in Spanish, and we verbalize back and forth. And the same thing with Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron hit a home run, I told him, oh, yeah, hey, the next time you come to bat, I'm sticking with you. You just stick it wherever you want. You throw it across your face, I'm going to hit your butt out of here. You know? And we used to joke about it, and this is honest to God truth. The first time I got Hank out, but when he had left Milwaukee and went back to Atlanta, and I got to throw him a fastball, and I could bottom. The ball down, he hit my leg. I threw it anyway, and it came out as a changeup. He swung and missed, and he looked at me and says, oh, you don't want to play backyard baseball no more. I said, hey, I got you now. But if you was asked St. Karen, if he was up here with us, the the pitcher that he used to hate the most was a guy named Curt Simmons.
Slower, oh, he's mean.
Slowest.
Yeah.
And I guess he owned Hank at that time. But getting back to the Pirates here, hell with them guys. But at least myself, always had a great time with great teammates, Candy, Donnie Rowles from Junior, I got to call real name, Rennie Stanton, Pops, Parker, our whole team really stuck together, like Candy said, on and off the field. If something ever happened into a place outside the ballpark, something was happening in the street, you could take a team picture because we were always together. So that's the way it is. Even like now, we're retired, no summer passed on, we know about it.
Well, that's neat.
We respect it.
That's neat, the togetherness. We loved watching it. I mean, thinking about just, talking about family, that's it right there. I mean, you guys really were. It wasn't just a show for 3 hours a night. Let's go into postseason.
We'd have been on a three-hour game.
Okay, sorry, 2.5 hours. Two to 2.5 hours.
Yeah, Steve Blass.
Hey, we were on that.
We didn't have the commercials as long or the replays that take half an hour. It's supposed to be 3 minutes.
We had no headphones back then.
We had a little throwback last night for a while. Yeah. It was still twilight in the eighth inning. Game one at Riverfront. Pirates are playing the Reds in the championship series. And you're the starter in game one. And I read that shoulder had been barking at that point.
Actually, it was my back.
Back?
I missed a lot of starts in 79, probably about 10. I forget how many. It was the back problems, which... couple of weeks, I'll have surgery on it to take care of what was back then. But started the first game against Seaver, and George Foster hit one off. Wow. I didn't even turn around. I mean, whack. But that's the only two runs I gave up through seven, so kept the team in the game, and I think it was Phil Garner that hit a home run off Seaver to tie it, and we actually went into extra innings the first game. So Donnie Robinson came on, did a wonderful job. So that was the start of us sweeping the Reds. So beat Seaver, you beat their best pitcher, and you got a good shot.
Let me tell you what happened. Before that game, Willie Stargell had Ken to the ballpark early. Ken and I used to go to the ballpark very early. So if it happened one day, Pop and I went, Candy wasn't there yet. So when you come in the Cincinnati Reds clubhouse, there's a chalkboard right there, right to the right. And Pop said, let's get Candy. So we put up on Candy, George Foster, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, they say, we can't wait for you to get to the ballpark. We're going to kick your joint. So Candy came in and saw that sign. His eyes got about that big. I showed them yang guys. I would tell you, he went out. I tell you, he blew them away. Then when the Donnie Robinson came in, he threw. That's about the best game I've ever seen in the body, or the hardest curveballs I've ever seen in my life that night. It was from Donnie Robinson to go and get that game for us. But this is the kind of stuff we do to each other, not being mad, but just get you fired up and watch your veins pop out the side of your neck and your eyes get.
Yeah.
Your scalp goes back and, you know.
Tony Perez sent a limo to the airport for you. Pick you up.
Send a limo to the airport to make sure you get here on time for this whooping. Okay, continue.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you know, was there any tension? It sounded like you guys were always so laid back. I mean, within the lines, I guess.
There was no tension.
No.
It wasn't until that I remember.
No.
Do you think that helped you
guys?
It's
there. You know it's a big game. I mean, you're an idiot if you don't. I mean, it's
yeah.
But you just go do what you normally do. You just try not to make any mistakes and get the other fans riled up and going.
Right.
It's like you're playing in Montreal and what was their mascot? Yuppie.
And
he'd be running up and down. You know Andre Dawson's coming up with the bases drunk. And it's like, not a good sign. Yeah, Candelaria, another fine mess you got yourself into. How are you going to figure a way out? And you just do what comes natural. You get worried and you lose this, and then you lose the game.
So those first two games are both extra innings. Mm-hmm. You win game two in 10. and then coast in game three. What was the, I guess, there was the mood was the same, right? I mean, you guys are, you're winning games, you're...
Better than theirs, right? Yeah. You win the first two games and extras, the mood was good. Better than Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They got to win three now.
And then you come back to Pittsburgh, and the fans, I'm sure, at that point were even crazier, huh?
Yeah.
Yes. So we had great fans here in Pittsburgh all the years I played as a ball player and a team that I coached with when Chuck come in asked me to take over Harvey Haddix's job. But we had great fans, but at that time, I think we come in fourth that year. But this is just one of those things. Baseball goes in circles. Every, like, 10-year circles, you'll win it, and then maybe 5-10 more years, you win again, except for the Giants. They made a habit of doing this. And Cincinnati Reds. But that's where it was. And the thing I really enjoyed about our team was, again, I had to go back to the family situation. We stayed together, win, lose, or draw. We always stuck together, played together, drank together, because I'm going to let you guys pee. We would drink. And
no.
And we didn't want to make enough money to get a limousine, so we get about four or five taxis to the ballpark and bring those hot wings, too. So that's where we were.
And so you're ready to go to the World Series now, and you get all the hot wings you want if you win the World Series. Was there an anticipation for that? Did you guys have to wait for a little while, or did the series start?
I think it was snowed out the first game, Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore snowed.
Really?
We got snowed out in Baltimore.
It was like ice out there. Yeah, it was ice out on the field. So you were, first game was delayed.
So, is the anticipation killing you at this point? Hey, we can't wait to get out there, or is it just more time for beer and wings?
Go get a cold one and play tomorrow.
I wasn't pitching the first game, so it didn't matter to me. I think Keeson pitched the first game.
Buster started the first game?
Yeah, I believe so, yep. We just lost Bruce Keeson.
Yeah. Memory's not all gone, right?
Yep.
Let's move on to game four. So the series isn't going great, but from what you guys are saying, there's no lacking confidence. Still, you're back at Three Rivers. Terry Crowley hits a pinch hit double off tee. Orioles are in the lead for the first time. They have a 6-run eighth inning, and you're thinking, all right, we're down 3-1 now. Where are you at that point? How do you feel?
Not in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Actually, when I pitched the third game, I'm sorry, I'm skipping one.
That's good.
I pitched the third game, and I didn't know my father was there. My father lives in Puerto Rico, and he never saw me pitch in a big league game. And my father, will give you an idea, when I called him, told him I had pitched a no-hitter back in 76, he goes, I know, it should have been a perfect game. I mean, this is what I had to deal with, so it was never good enough. So anyway, I didn't know he was there, and had a rain delay. I came back out. They hit me pretty good. I was a losing pitcher. So I see him after the game, and I'm like, wow, it's Dad. And I go to hug him. He goes, I flew all this way to see this crap. And he didn't say it that way, okay? You fill in the blank. But it was a tough man. But when I won game six, he didn't say a word, nor did I get a phone call. Mm. That's the way it is.
You got the ring?
He got my ring, too. I haven't seen it in 40 years. Stole it, thief.
So you guys get past game four. You're still having some hot wings. That's still the mood? I mean,
you're up against the wall.
I mean, what else can you do, right? I mean, that's what it sounds like, that this team just said, you know, look, we're just going to go play the best we can and let's
see what happens.
Where they may, right?
They had the right label for us, the Ballin Bucks. Mm-hmm. And we came out swinging. We've been there before. And we had the personnel to get the job done. And what? 1 second here. This gentleman right here. Are we bothering you, dude? I'm looking at you. Anyway.
You want one?
They're glad
you. Yeah.
But we had been here before. We was having a good time. We laughed and joked with each other. And if somebody give up a home run, you say, boy, damn, Buck, that was a good one. I said, yeah, man. But, you know, I said to myself, well, the next time he comes to bat, I'm going to see how far he hit one off his bat. But, you know, but this is where we played. Always hard-nosed, and I knew how to go get it without any problems. And like in Candy's situation, or even like Cheek, he was our savior. The tougher the situation, the harder it got, the tougher we got. We fessed up to him. We never backed down, and we never start crying and making mistakes or start pointing at your faults. We never had that. We didn't, you know, we never had that. Everything, hey, let's go. We see these SOBs tomorrow. I'll be here. Well, Cannon and I go to ball. 8 o'clock game, we'd be there 12 o'clock waiting. Self-starter, we come in the ballpark ready to go. And that's where it was.
And things changed. In those final three games, The Orioles score two total runs. The Pirates win them all. And, Candy, you're in game, obviously you started game six. Six shutout innings, never in trouble, no extra base hits. Did you just feel better that day? Did you just have it all working? What was going on for you?
I'm not one to make excuses, but we had a lead when I pitched the third game. And that rain delay, it stiffened everything up, and I got hit, plain and simple. I won't use that as an excuse, but that was it. But funny thing is, game six, if we would have lost, we're going to fly right out after the game. So the equipment manager calls my room and says, you need this, Hooli. He says, you need to get your luggage down, Candy. And I said, I'm not going anywhere. My luggage is staying here. We'll be back after the damn game. And I did. I left my luggage in the room. I refused to send it down. I said, I'm pitching. I'm pitching. We're winning. That was it.
I'm writing that one down. I like that. And that's confidence, right? I mean, if you're not confident in yourself, I mean, maybe you don't pitch that way that day, right? So now we go to the morning of October 17th, 1979, which is more than 30 years ago. It's game seven. What's that morning like? I mean, it's game seven. Tonight, if you win, you're champs, and you're always champs, and you have rings, and you have stories and memories, and people like me are asking you dumb questions down the road.
Bibby started game seven. He went like four innings or so, if I remember. He gave up a home run to the second baseman. Who was that?
Dower.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dower. Yeah.
But that morning, I mean, it was just like any other morning, right? You just wake up.
Sun came up, right?
Get the old lady up, get some breakfast.
Yeah. So now Willie Stargell hits a go-ahead home run off Scott McGregor in the sixth inning. And I want to know, Grant, were you already warming up? Did you see that? Can you remember that? Ken Singleton went back on that ball and almost caught it, it seemed like, but
no,
yeah. Were you warming yet, or were you?
I was.
Or did you warm? Was, start warming after. Do
was
you remember?
That the game?
I don't. Was that the seventh inning? Seventh, eighth inning. What inning was that?
You were already in the game. I thought that was in the sixth inning, and then you came the very next inning. I thought so.
How did he get the win? How did he get the win? Had to be the inning before.
I was pitching. Jim Pop hit the home run. I can't get the game. You can't get a win coming into the game.
That's what sitting with Euchre will do to you, okay?
Yeah. No, I was pitching when Pop hit the home run.
What do you remember about that?
I came in the game and got Bibby and Dinah Roberts or someone out of the trouble. Huh?
Got the home run off Bibby. I got the
book
right here.
Well, wait a minute. He's talking about before I get. When Pop hit the home run, who was pitching?
McGregor.
He hit it off McGregor, but I was pitching before Pop hit the home run, dude. Yeah. That's how they gave me the W. I was beyond the mound when the team got the W. That's when it's. What inning?
Home run is Starzl third, sixth inning. Off McGregor, one on, one out.
So you must have been in the fifth.
So that came in the fifth inning.
Yeah. Bibby went four.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you.
Four innings, three,
Okay.
That's
okay.
Came in at the bottom.
So,
I came in at
what
the
was the attendance? So, but you retired the first seven hitters you faced in that.
I came in and got Dinah Robinson. I finished inning because I struck out the right-hand hitter. I can't remember his name. Anyway, I threw him a couple fastballs away, and I dropped a slider on him, struck him out. And then that's when we started going. After that inning, I think Pop came up, hit the home run, and we just continued on that way. Then Teague came in, and
you're four outs away at that point when Teague comes in.
Yeah.
And I mean,
Chuck, online. I walk Lee May because I know.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. You want to stop talking?
No, you're perfect. You're perfect.
Lee May was coming to play, and Chuck on the mound and said, "Buck, what do you want to do?" I said, "I'm gonna tell you what, Chuck." He said, "You know, he's only hitting 106 off you." I said, "I don't care." When he was in Houston, I threw a fastball and he hit at the top of the dome. So I'm thinking, "Can him out?" So he's not gonna be a hero tonight. So I threw him a fastball, unhittable. That flipped it through curveballs. He swung it the next two, and then Chuck says, "What do you want to do?" I mean, what are you going to do? I said, "Well, I'm not going to throw him a fastball that's a hittable fastball. You know, you're allowed to get him out without hitting the ball hard." And finally got him out. And then the Teague come in. That was the name of the game, you know. And we won. And somebody hit a ball to Parkway in right field. And Parkway started slipping, sliding on all the ice and stuff out there because we knew he had a bad knee. As old, baby.
Boy, my heart sunk. My heart sunk when I saw him slip. I went, "Oh, there it goes."
So then we ended up winning. And
yeah.
The party started, and clubhouse, and the crabs, and the beer started flowing again. I jumped in my car, and my wife and I, my brother-in-law, from Puerto Rico. The plane got in at 6 in the morning. The time I left Baltimore that night, I was home at 4:30 in the morning. And then these guys came in about 6, he said. But I have been through that before, and I didn't want to get caught up in all that stuff.
I was flying without the plane. I don't remember.
So that was it.
Did that ninth feel like forever? Didn't they use the five pitchers? I think the Orioles used five different pitchers.
Well, he's hitting us and everything else.
You're just waiting to celebrate at that point, and you can't. Okay, come on now.
They was doing everything they could to try to get us out, but we were unstoppable.
And that's
Log Robinson and. I mean, everything was clicking on all cylinders, and the boys were partying and whooping and talking trash.
And then the party was on, and the president was in there, right? Jimmy Carter was there?
Mr. Carter was there, yes.
I forgot about him.
Yeah, he was there. So was the Secret Service. Stayed away from them,
did
too.
Did you get a whistle beer?
Oh, yeah. The old man liked myself. I said, "Dog, we better get out of here."
For the Secret Service helps you out, too, right? Yeah. So champions forevermore, 1979. Battle and Bucks winning the World Series that year.
That's
so
right.
we took you through most of the year. Pardon my one hiccup there. Why don't we ask some questions from the audience? Right? So the first question here is about the Stars and the Caps and the We Are Family moniker. How did that all come about? Not everybody knows that. That's a...
I'm not sure, but it was Willie that started it. So if you did something good, you got a star. You got a win, you got a star. You got a big hit, you got a star.
Yeah. How many stars did you get? Did you get a lot of stars?
I got a couple along the way, but I only wore one on my hat, not like Teague had 8,000 of them. I think Teague probably stole a couple from Willie, okay?
You know. How you know?
Yeah, my locker was next to him, yeah. Yeah.
Every time you did something to help the team win, or if you even if we lost, and you did something to make it close or whatever, Pop would give you a star. But Ken, I know Kenny got a lot of them. Teague got a lot of them, but Teague kept his. I would get stars, but every time I play a game, I come to the bullpen. The next day, I say, "Were you at the game last night? You deserve a star." These stars I got, I just kept them, maybe about 10 of them. And I put them on my shirts, had them pressed in at the cleaners, and he tacked them on for me. But anybody that's at the ballpark that I knew, like, "I'm sorry, I wake you up, dude, I'll give you a star." But You did something great, outstanding. Even the fans that was there watching us. One night we played at what, about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning? There used to be some girls that sit on the corner. I gave them, hey, you, the game's over. I took and gave them a ball, gave them a star, and took off the clubhouse.
That actually started when the last inning they can start a game. What is it, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning now? Yeah. I don't know what it is. That's but we're in Cincinnati one year. And they had never had a rainout, and we waited and waited, and the game started about 11:30 at night, because Holdman or whatever his name was wanted not to have a rainout, so the game ended about 4 a.m. And that's when that rule came into effect that you can't start an inning after a certain time. So
they were beating us too, weren't they?
I just know it was a long night. When we get to the park at noon.
They don't want to lose them. We came back and got them. He said, don't do that.
One of the questions, when the Reds knocked the Pirates out of the playoffs a lot of times in the 70s, you're with some of that time you guys were there. But what was it like to beat the Reds in the playoffs? I mean, was for both of you guys, I don't know how much, I mean, maybe for, you know, Bruce Keeson or somebody that was there the whole time, or Rennie Stennett or somebody, maybe Pops or whatever, might have had a little bit more satisfaction, I guess, right? Because they were there all those times. But
yeah, I was there when they beat us in 75. When they won 75. That was the best team I've ever seen. I mean, the whole infield. And Dave Concepcion was the worst in the infield, and he was a 10-time All-Star or something like that. I mean, jeez. It was the best team I've seen. It was a great team. If they ever had some pitching, it would have been all over. But it was a satisfaction in beating them. I don't know what to say about that. You just play.
Yeah.
I was in Baltimore.
Yeah, I know you weren't there for much of that time.
And we lost Bruce. I'm sure a lot of you know that June 2nd he passed away. One story about Bruce, the kind of pitcher Bruce was, that he used to like to hit Mike Schmidt every year. Just to say hello. And Schmidt, he got tired of it one year. And you talk about a great third baseman. I mean, just watching Schmidt play was good, really good. So he drills Schmidt again, and Mike's going down to first base, and he looked at Bruce, and he goes, the next time you hit me, I'm going to come on out there. And Bruce just threw his glove down and said, why wait? And the fight started. Right? Schmidt wound up breaking his thumb or something with
hey,
that.
Yeah, I got him.
Someone got him. I don't know. Why wait?
Don't mess with the buck. And if anybody here was a Philly fan back then, we used to have a lot of parties with the Phillies, too.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
We didn't like each other. But we didn't.
That's good baseball.
But we respected each other.
Yeah.
Dodgers were the same way. We didn't like them either. I had a fight with them in the tunnel that people didn't see. Whole team, both teams in the tunnel in Three Rivers. Not many people saw that.
Baby was in there.
Tunnel was full. That's all I know.
When Baby walked in, the tunnel got dark. Baby was separating people.
What about in that 79 season, Teague had to take over in left field. They had the switch for, what, one batter, right? It went for
you,
right?
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, Teague, how do you do it? How do you do it?
Darrell Evans.
Darrell Evans was coming into bat. Well, his name was How Do You Do It? Nickname. So when Chuck comes to mind, he says, Teague, you go to the left. Buck, get him out. I like to take. I said, I'm going to make him hit the ball in left field now. So I'm going to tell you what, Teague. If you drop this, I won't come out and kick your yang myself, you know. So I threw Doody a couple fastballs in, got him to chase the slider, hit a little fly to left field, and I think it'll take you. Got the ball. We get the win. I look at the dugout, the whole dugout's on the floor laughing. So,
but we shag every day at the pitchers, you know, batting practice. We're out there shagging. And we're athletes.
Yeah.
It was an easy catch. It was right to him.
So that was the situation there, and came over. We're going back to the clubhouse, which is down right field line, which is quite not a long walk, but it's a ways down. Step up from here to the gentleman in the blue shirt in the back. And Chuck opened the door. Chuck opens the door and holds it for myself and Teak behind me. And I get, once that door closed, Chuck says, "That won't work." We laugh. But that was a good time. So we always had a good time. When or lose, we had a good time.
What about someone wanted to ask about what was the impact of Bill Robinson on the team?
Bill Robinson. Oh, outstanding person, ball player, one of the finest men you want to meet, along with a lot of other guys on our team, ball players you probably met. But Billy was a good ball player.
Gentleman.
Yes, one of again.
Class. I don't know what he was doing on our team. Guess you gotta have a token, right?
But you know, Billy hit a home run and stuff, and Billy just nothing really outstanding. He just do his job and quiet, come in. Hey, Billy. We just call Billy he's passed out. His nickname was Blinky. Because you talk to him, you start blinking about 100 miles an hour, you know what I'm saying? Come on, Buck, don't call me Blinker. I said, why? I said, what's your nickname? He said, well, because it seemed like I got something in my eye. Where I said, Billy, I said, I've been knowing you since you used to play at the Atlanta Braves in the minor leagues. You know, and he used to be a third baseman then. And they were supposed to have taken third baseman at that time, taking his job, and he ended up being with the Pirates. But one hell of a guy lived out in West Mifflin, I think it was Elizabeth, PA. But just great people to me. In fact, he and I were only Rook and I were 5 days apart in age, and Bill and I were 5 days apart on the other side in age. But married, kids, great people.
I had a good fortune. He was a hitting coach one of the years I worked as a broadcaster in Jacksonville for the Dodgers minor league team at that time.
Well,
so I got a chance to spend a summer with him, and I echo that. He was a really good man.
Well, the 2 days before Billy died, I was in Jacksonville, and were you there when Mike Easer was there?
Mm-hmm, yep, 06.
Okay. Yeah, Billy and I was talking, and then I went to Chattanooga. The 2 days later, I heard that Billy had died. I said, man, get out of here. I said, I just talked to him the day before yesterday. Mm-hmm. He said when he died, he had the Bible on his chest, you know. So, man, but that's where it was. Mm-hmm. And things happened.
A lot of good teammates. Candy, you crack me up with that. What's he doing on our team? This question is for Grant. You were on the 71 Orioles team. So did the 79 series bring back memories of 71?
No, it didn't bring back no memories. It's the fact that when you're out there on the mound, I don't care what year it was, but when I'm against the opposing team, unless you got on black and gold, and they didn't, I'm going to get you out. And vice versa, when I was with the Pirates, wearing black and golds at that time. But at that time, I was with Montreal, and I told you I knocked Parkway down. You know, mm-hmm. It's the fact that there's no feeling. It's just that I'm going to get you out. I'm going to try to get you, do my best, my ability to get you out, no matter what team you're on or who I'm with. You give me the ball, my job is to get you out. So there's no animosity, no nothing. I talk. Even that game in Montreal, when I did that to start, the game was over. I went over and got some of their food. You know, hey, Buck, you know, I said, I know it. Pass chicken. You know, that's where it was. But there was no feelings in 71 and 79. I had a lot of friends in Baltimore. And a lot of my friends lived out from Baltimore area, out in Phoenix, Maryland. And I had a lot of friends out there. Like I said, I had a couple of friends that are banker. In Baltimore, my agent was Seymour Goldstein. He's my agent. He's from Baltimore. So, hey, mm-hmm. You did a good job. Thank you. That's all. No animosity. Nobody got mad. I don't get mad that easy unless you hit me.
This is for John. What was Grant like as a coach?
Same as he was when we were a player. I mean, Grant and I, we ran together when we played, so. As he said, we'd be at the park 12, 1 o'clock every day. We'd be there. So It's my friend. He's a pitching coach. It was easy. You do your job. Well, he's not going to bother you, right?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. That was the hardest thing in the world for me to do. When Chuck called me and said, Buck, you're the coach. Because I thought I had a chance to go to Milwaukee, California, someplace else. He said, Buck, you got 3 days to make up your mind to be with us or to be a coach here, or you can go elsewhere. And then he sat down the next day. He said, this is the way this coaching business goes. You and Ken and I know it like this. Every day you guys are together. You're like twins. I said, yeah. He says, you got to break that line. I said, oh, baby, what am I going to do? So the only thing that got us across is the fact that he spoke Spanish and I speak Spanish. So not too many guys on the team spoke Spanish. If I want to do something in Canada, I tell him, oye, vete para allá, un trago aquí, bebe. That means go down the street and get a beer or whatever. And they'd be looking and say, what you guys saying? But then we would never meet at the ballpark. We go outside the ballpark. We're always in there. It was Dinah Robinson, Candy, and myself. And we're like the three musketeers. At one time, we had Terry Forrester. You want to tell them about that thing?
And you don't want them. I told you.
One day, we were in Montreal. We had an off day.
And that sounds dangerous.
No. There wasn't nothing bad. It was just funny. So go ahead.
You want me to?
No, you tell them.
So it's an off day. We're flying to New York. And the Pirates at the time, you know, whatever. They wouldn't fly us to New York the night before, so we stay in Montreal, go out, and it's an off day, so we have a couple of drinks the night before. So Grant, myself, and Terry Foster, another one who passed away, we're going to meet at 9 o'clock. We're going to go have some breakfast, walk around, see what we're going to do. So we go down, and we find Maurice Richard's place, great hockey player. We're sitting there having breakfast, Bloody Mary, whatever. And then we decide we're going to go take a left and walk down, and we hit Old Montreal, Notre Dame Church, beautiful. So as we're walking there, they got a pantomime showing going on pollution. And they're walking around, mimes all in their signs and buses, trains, you know, factories, all pollution's bad. So I go to talk to Grant. He's not there. I look over there, Terry. I look down the block, and there's Grant running full speed. And I'm like, oh, great, something bad's happening. So I start running after him. Two blocks, three blocks. Terry Foster's right with me now, and he's going, Candy, what are we running for? And I said, I don't know. Look, he's going. And we keep on running. We keep on running. About six blocks later, I'm not lying, about six blocks later, finally catch up to him. He's out of breath. We're all out of breath. Grant, what happened? Someone steal your wallet. What the hell's going on? Did you see him? See who? He says, the people in the plaza by the church. It's the KKK. So after Terry and I stopped laughing, he goes, and don't you tell anyone, you two son of a okay.
Yeah, right. You know what happened that night before I had watched the movie? And it had a KKK on. I fell asleep with them on my mind. So when I saw these people in our wedding, I said, oh, shit, yeah. Oh, baby. We got a workout that day.
Couldn't get you to run on the field, but that's what it is. Bring the mimes out.
Ain't gonna get me.
He beat Usain Bolt by 20 yards, let me tell you. He was gone.
Okay, let's go.
As soon as I composed myself. what was Willie Stargell's influence?
Met him when I was 18. I was in awe. Then he became more or less like a father figure, like brothers. He used to pick me up in his 64 Silver Shadow Rolls with a hat on, his chauffeur hat on. Open the door for me, put me in the back seat, and just drive me all through Bradenton and Sarasota, and we'd stop and he'd open the door for me. We went on trips to Bermuda together, and you can imagine he and I riding around on mopeds, so speed limit 25, but it was a good influence, good person to talk to, and great teammate. Loved him more than the ball player that he was, and he was pretty good at that. He's my friend. Meant a lot to me.
So we understand here. I knew Willie back in the 60s when I was with the Phillies. And Pop, at that time, Willie was playing left field with the Pirates in Forbes Field. And he's another guy who used to spank me every time I would cock my arm, he'd be a bullet somewhere. So long time ago, and if anybody remember Forbes Field, I had to go through their dugout to get to our dugout on third baseline. So, but I just look up, they used to have little white cups going up a rail out there. So I asked the guy, I said, hey, kid, what's that? He says, well, that's what the guys drink before they go to the hit. I said, yeah. So I was pitching that day, so I looked at him. So Calvin Coolidge was our pitching coach, McLeish. Mm-hmm. Said, Buck, come on over here. So I went by to my glove, and I just... I cleaned out all the drinks. Was running down on the back of my uniform, so I started running again. So I said, what the hell are you doing? I said, I'm getting this game ready. So I saw Stargell, hey, Buck, somebody told me not to drink, so I said, mm-hmm. I said, you guys ain't going to get no hits today. He only got two. I ended up winning the game. And that time, that's when I got to know Willie. You know, and I used to look at him. He's hitting line drive. It's all right. Then Clemente was, oh, yeah, Jackson. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like the way you throw the ball. Maguto come to tell the pelota, you know. So these guys know what I'm talking about. And so I used to face him when I was living in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, I get him out. He got the United States, a different game. Now, he used to wear my butt out. So but anyway, we used to talk. And like Candace, I got to know Willie and all the ball players. And when I became a Pirate, when I really got – close to Willie, and we would do things together. Willie was, he didn't run with us, but he would be there if we needed. And anything you wanted done or something happened and somebody treated you wrong, somebody go tell Pop. And Pop get everything figured out. And then, does anybody watch Columbo on TV? And one more thing. That was Pop. And one more thing. So that's the way it was. I love you.
Got some a couple more minutes for John. You played for Danny Murtaugh and Chuck Tanner. What were the differences in styles between the two?
And Jim Leland.
And Jimmy Leland, right? Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Yeah. Include him too. That's those three of the Pirates' great managers.
Danny was quiet. Danny just sit there and just watch the game. Really didn't say all that much. Chuck was a whole different thing. Danny, you couldn't get away with stuff. I found that out quick. Chuck, you could. I got to tell you my hot dog story with Chuck.
Oh, baby, that's a good one.
Candlestick Park, I'd pitched a Friday night game, and I forgot Saturday was an afternoon game. And like Grant said, we was always early. So I get up and I'm like, oh man, I find out it's a day game, I get dressed quick, and I very, very rarely ever went on the team bus. I mean, people are looking at me like, yeah, what's up? Anyway, get to the park, batting practice, no food in the clubhouse. And if you ever been to Candlestick Park, the end of the dugout, first two or three, four rows, you could put your arm on the rail and talk to the people in the front rows there, in the box seats. So I take $5 with me, and I go, and I see a kid eating a hot dog in the first inning. Light bulb goes off. Candelaria has an idea, right? So he runs down, and he gets a baseball. So I go back with the baseball, and the kid's eating the hot dog. So I start flipping up the baseball, and the kid goes, "Can I have that?" And I said, "Yeah. $5? Get me one of those hot dogs. I'll even get a couple of signatures on it for you." So the kid takes off. About two innings later, he finally comes down. And as he's coming down these long steps in Candlestick, Chuck Tanner on the other end starts walking towards me. And I went, "Oh, fuck." Right? Here he comes. So I start walking towards him, and he stops me. He goes, "Where you going?" I said, "Bathroom." So I go over there, pretending anyway, go in, close the door, do nothing, looking out the thing, go over to the bat rack, sitting there, and the kid finally makes it down, and he's going, "Candelaria," all the way across, okay? 45, John Candelaria. He finally taps Chuck on the back, and he goes, "Hey, tell seven. Tell 45 I've got his hot dog." And Chuck goes, "Hey, Candy, your $250 hot dog's here." One of my stupid moves, okay? There were several.
Chuck Tanner.
That was the difference between Danny and Chuck, okay?
Time for one more question. Unfortunately, just one more. How about Doc Ellis stories? Anyone got a Doc story?
I didn't play with Doc except with the Yankees. 1976, when I was with the Yankees, mm-hmm. And I tell you, Doc was a very good pitcher.
Yes.
But Doc also thought he was smarter than everybody else. He was always trying to trick somebody. "Hey, man, let's go over there. You see that dude? A week away is there. So, you know, we get anything we want off him." Well, Doc, we was in the 76 World Series. We had lost four in a row against Cincinnati Reds, the Red Machine. So, Figueroa was supposed to start the last game. So Billy Martin gave me the ball. I said, "Buck, here, you're going to start." Well, Steinbrenner's box was up there. If you're in the dugout, Steinbrenner's box would be over your head. You know, come down the bullpen, and all of a sudden, I'm down to get ready to throw. Eddie Figueroa was supposed to start, but he got a little bit afraid. So Thurman Munson, Chris Chambliss, "Hey, yeah, Billy, give Buck the ball. So I'm down to get ready to throw. All of a sudden, in the bullpen, the phone rings. Steinbrenner calls down, "Hey, see Grand Jack's down to get Eddie Figueroa out there. He's going to pitch his damn game, or somebody's a couple of heads going to roll." So I go sit back down, and I can see Billy down there in the dugout talking with George in that box up there. So Thurman comes and he said, "Buck," he says, "Stay ready. You get ready anyway," because Figgy only went with two innings. Mm-hmm. And that time, when Figgy got beat up a little bit, I came in, got the guys out, and we had already lost three in a row. Cincinnati whooped us like we stole something. So, you know, and I come in the pitch, and Johnny Bench hit Pete Rose on first base. I threw a pitch to Johnny Bench. I don't know if anybody is a Yankee fan. I threw a line drive, and Johnny Bench hit a line drive so hard I couldn't get out of the way. And I just caught it between my legs. You know, when I finished up, and I'm like, caught it behind, between my legs. That get Pete Rose out of first base. So when the game is over, Scooter, what's Scooter's real name? The announcer, real announcer.
Phil Rizzuto.
Phil Rizzuto come down. And
say, "Holy cow!"
Yeah. He come down. "Hey, Jackson." Well, we lost. In the clubhouse, everybody's walking around, drawing on a scooter. "Hey, that was a catch of the World Series." I said to myself, "Hey, I'm glad something happened because we got whooped again." So, but I tell you what, Benny Martin was a fine manager, good guy. Like just like Chuck, I never saw Murtaugh, but and another guy from the Baltimore Orioles. I don't want to bring him up right now, but he is great managers, good times.
Any Doc stories?
But Doc, Doc always making bets. Oh, I'm sorry. I saw my boss, and I started talking to Billy. Billy and Doc had made a wager about winning a game. So at that time, George had made a wager with Doc about winning. Anyway, we lost. So after we lose the World Series, I guess Doc and George had said that if we win this game, blah, 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 we can go down to Harvey's in New York. But you get a shirt down there. It costs normally about $20. But now those shirts will go for like $200-something. Well, he gave us a gift certificate for $200. So it was Doc, his lady at that time, and my wife and me. We go down to get this stuff. Catfish Hunter was right behind us. So we're down there, well, give me one of those, give me one of this. What do you think we have? Oh, we got at least $100 left. When we got our tab, the guy said like $700. And we said, down to Barney's in New York. And Doc says, Buck, I said, Doc, what happened? He said, Buck, I don't know, but this is one of George Steinbrenner's stores. And I don't know nothing about New York. And after I looked at Doc, I said, Doc, this is another fine mess you got us in. Take all that stuff back, you know. So that was one of Doc's stories to me. And another fact that he was having trouble with his kidneys, which he ended up dying with. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to tell the truth. Or he could have, not to say he would have lived, but he could have gotten help from somebody else to get the operation done to make him survive or live or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's my Doc story.
Mm-hmm. I only played with Doc in 75 before he got traded to Yankees, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Willie Randolph. Doc was always good with me. He would sit with me when I came up in June that year and just tell me what the hitters, what he thought, what they could hit and what they could not and how I should pitch them. He was always good with me that way. But wish would have played with him a little bit longer, but it was before he went to the bullpen in those pink curlers and some of the crazy stuff that he did. But he always got pissed at me because I didn't call him Doc. I called him by his name, Philip. And he just
I didn't know that either, yeah. Well, we had some great stories. Let's thank John Candelaria, Grant Jackson.
I just want to say one thing. When Joe asked me about Doc and I started rambling with Billy Martin, I was singing a lot about Billy. When he asked the question, I forgot all about Doc. But Billy Martin was you. When I was at the Yankees, he and I used to be road buddies, you know, because I was one of the elder statesmen. He and I used to do a lot of stuff together. Him and Yogi, because I lived over in New Jersey, and I used to ride him back and forth to the ballpark. And I used to get some stories from Billy. I'll be driving, Yogi be sitting here, and Billy be sitting in the back seat talking about, well, back, Jackson, you know, back in the 50s and stuff, you know, I'm looking in the mirror. And I tell you, but they used to sit there and talk. I used to hear a lot. I can tell you guys a lot of stories, make ears really perk up. But next time I see you, you guys have a great time, and thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Yourself. And see you again.
Thank you so much for indulging me as well. Thanks, guys.